Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Hello, everyone. Letitia Burbaum here in the studio. Thanks, Paul, for getting us all set up.
We're ready and raring to go here, and I'm proud to say you got a good, I'm proud of being Irish, so you have a good Irishman on the show today.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And briefly, before we get started on the show, it's hysterical that every time we walk in, Paul really knows everybody. He's like a jack of all trades. He knows a little bit of everything about everyone.
we're talking beforehand because I'm a Catholic. I love to go hear the Mass in different languages. And Tony says, I do too. Here, you guessed it. Absolutely.
Super fun. Well, I'm really excited today because we're going to be promoting Sean Flynn and who he's on the show today. And before we get into too much of the details, I want to let everyone know today's a special day. Today is the actual launch of his new book, and it is The Cure That Works. Sean, you want to say hello?
Hey, hi. Thank you so much for having the show, Letitia. And Paul, great. Great to meet another Irishman.
I'm sorry. I didn't say Sean there. I was thinking of the last guest.
You called me Tony, which is fine. I got it.
That's a good idea.
Tony, Sean. Tony, Sean. Everyone will remember it. It's Sean Flynn. So I want to give you a little bit of a brief intro, if you're okay, and tell everybody a little bit about who you are and, you know, why we're so excited to have you on the show here. And then we'll kind of get into, because today is such a special day, we'll go dive right into the questions regarding the book. Is that okay?
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So I want to let everyone know that Sean, he is an author. You may have heard of him before. He was an international bestseller of The Economies for Dummies. So if you don't know, that's the really fun book. That's the yellow print. And you can find it anywhere, Barnes & Noble, online, Amazon. So definitely known for that. I think I even have a copy myself at home. Just it's always great to have quick tips and good things to give to my children as well, and just best practices in life. And he's also a co-author of the world's best-selling economies textbook. So he's an expert in behavioral economics, and Sean is a former national champion of the Japanese martial arts, Aikido. I'm sure Paul is going to have some
Aikido.
Aikido.
Yeah,
Paul's going to jump
fight
in
with the sticks and everything else here. Yeah,
right. And he currently serves as the chairman of the economies department or the economic department of Scripps College in Claremont, California. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of an introduction. I think that you've done an amazing job to this point, and we're so excited to have you on the show here to talk about your new book.
Oh, well, thank you, Letitia. Yeah, this book is a real passion project for me. It's been about 10 years in the making, and I've got good news for everyone in the country, which is kind of rare these days.
Well, I'm really excited. So maybe we can just jump right in. Are you okay with that?
Sure, yeah. Please.
Okay, great. So the first question I want to ask you is, what's the most important fact about the healthcare crisis?
Well, the most important fact, which almost no one knows, which is why I had to write the book and do all the research, is that the cure to all the problems, the high cost, the lack of people being covered, you know, we still got 29 million people uninsured right now, despite the best efforts of the Affordable Care Act. All these things already have proven solutions. Like, I could point you to Whole Foods Market's health insurance plan for their employees. I can point you to an innovative Medicaid system in Indiana, right, that empowers people, cuts costs massively, gives people total financial security. And, you know, these things work. Another country's also stolen all our best ideas, put them into place, and is spending half as much as England as Canada, 75% less than us. So there's a massive tidal wave of money that we could be saving and directing towards other really important things like education, paying off, you know, unfunded liabilities for pensions, making sure everyone gets their Social Security, that we can't do right now because we're spending so much on healthcare.
Right. Do you happen to know the dollar amount that we're currently spending by chance?
Okay, well, so we're spending, so a gross national product right now is about $20 trillion. It's actually a little higher. It's gone up nicely in the last few years, but say $20 trillion. And we're currently spending nearly 20% of that. It's actually 18% on healthcare. So, you know, 10% of $20 trillion is $2 trillion. So we're up near $4 trillion a year on healthcare. And just to put that in perspective, you know, when I say 18% of national income goes to healthcare, to explain how much money that is, you know, people need to know that last year, we only spent 4% of national income on the Defense Department and all the foreign wars. We only spent 5%. Only 5% on all the Social Security checks that went out last year. So when I say we're spending, you know, 13% too much, 18% total, it's so much money. It literally could solve every other funding problem you could think of, no matter what your political perspectives are, whether you want, you know, more government social services and Head Start programs, or you're interested in paying down the federal debt or cutting taxes, whatever it is that's your priority. We are wasting money in our healthcare system right now, and we don't have to be.
Well, we're spending way more in healthcare than any other industrialized nation. What are some of the causes that this is actually causing besides, I mean, this overall?
Okay, so we're at about, let me just give a little more context, because you're absolutely right. So we're at about 18% of our national income.
Right.
If you look at Canada, England, France, Japan, basically any other industrialized nation, they're between 8 and 10.
Okay.
Right? So this is why, for instance, Bernie Sanders gets excited about single payer or Medicare for all or copying Canada, because he's like, wow, if we're at 18 and Canada's at 10, we could save a boatload of money. But that other little country, and I'll keep it a secret for a while, which little country that copied all our best ideas, they're only spending 4.2%. And
okay.
They've got the world's healthiest population. And so that just shows you, you know, it's not just that we have a hideously expensive system, it's hideously expensive compared to even the single payer systems. And what's going on there is that we have basically anything that's covered by insurance in our system, you can't get the price in advance, right? So if you have health insurance, like I've got Blue Cross, Blue Shield through my employer, you know, I'm a college professor. If I go in, you know, say I get a softball injury, right? You know, my knee's a little swollen or whatever, I'll go into the doctor, there's a little office visit fee, maybe a copay, they'll do an x-ray or an MRI. And it's only 3 months later that I get a bill, right? And it's crazy numbers, and then there's a line down at the bottom that says you pay this amount.
Yep.
But, you know, in any system where you can't get the prices in advance, people will take advantage of you. Like, what do you think would happen if you went to a car dealer and he told you, oh, you like this car? Drive it away now. We've got your credit card on file. We'll charge you some amount starting in 3 months.
I would go nuts. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Or would you shop at a restaurant that doesn't have prices on the menu and won't tell you?
No.
Right?
No way.
But yeah, it's nuts, right? And so anything that's covered by health insurance in our system, and I don't just mean private insurance, but it's true also for, you know, if you've got your veteran in the VA system or Medicare, Medicaid, government insurance, you can't get the prices in advance. And then that's where all the device manufacturers, the pharmaceutical people, everyone can take advantage of the system, because essentially there's no way for anyone to mind the shop if they can't tell what the prices are in advance and can't comparison shop and there's no competition. So that's the fundamental thing. And let me just say one more point on that. You can see how devastating it is and how much it drives up costs by comparing that part of our medical system, right? Everything that's covered by health insurance, compare it to the stuff that's not covered. And there's actually lots of examples, right? Anything that's an elective procedure for insurance, cosmetic surgery, cosmetic dentistry, LASIK, you know, for your eyes, all of that, they'll tell you the
price efficient,
in advance.
Right? That's efficient. We know exactly how much that costs.
Yeah, and so like LASIK, you know, if you went back 20 years, it was, you know, $5,000 an eyeball back in the 90s. It's now $500 with a Groupon, right?
It's so unbelievable. You're right, with a Groupon.
Yeah, and also the quality's gone way up over that time as well, right? It's all like computer guided, and, you know, they have these fancy, like they call it wavefront or something, LASIK. And all these things, though, that's what happens when you have competition. The same is true for cosmetic surgery, right? If you think of a Michael Jackson nose job circa 1985 with, like, a celebrity nose job now where you can't even tell if they had one, right? The quality's gone way up, and the prices have come way down.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically the first step we need in our system is to make sure that prices are available and people can comparison shop and everyone has to compete on the provider end. That's absolutely crucial, and we have none of that right now.
Right. And so is there another solution you have, or is there another healthcare a country that's doing that already?
Okay, sure. So let me keep the secret, though, that other little country. Keep it a little bit longer.
All right.
You know, I, well, no, but I'm talking about this. I don't, and your audience should know, I'm not trying to bamboozle them, but, you know, people get distracted by that other country, and then they start making comparisons.
Okay,
literally
fair
everything
enough.
They're doing, yeah, everything they're doing works here, and I can show U.S. examples, right? So people should stay focused on the fact that it works here.
Got it.
But politically speaking, and answer your question, if you want a healthcare system to work overall, there's two basic things you want it to deliver, right? One, there should be efficiency, you know, not wasting money, making sure it's going to its best uses and actually making people healthy. And then the other, you know, depending on your preferences, your vocabulary, you might call it social justice, you might call it human rights, but we do want to take care of everyone, right? Basic health care, I think, is pretty much in most people's mind, if not a human right, something really close in their minds.
But do you really think that the healthcare system can deliver both? Financial security, yes. And economy, yes. Economic efficiencies?
Yes, and I know, you know, I teach finance, and you're a finance person, a financial planner, and that on the surface, that sounds maybe a little good, too good to be true.
Right.
But the way you do it, and you can do it, is you need to design a system that both delivers the financial security while still giving everyone in the system financial incentives not to waste money and to compete and become more efficient. And so let me describe like what Whole Foods Markets does.
Oh, that'd be great.
With their health insurance. Okay, so they've been doing this since 2002, so it's not new. Both their unions approve of it and the workers love it. So basically, you know, a lot of us have insurance plans with an annual deductible, right?
Yep.
And recently these deductibles have been going way too high.
Yep.
But at Whole Foods, there's an annual deductible of $1,850 a year. Okay. And
like,
I'm simplifying slightly.
Literally $1,800.
Yeah, $1,850 a year.
That's
and
it.
So
okay.
you know, Whole Foods pays for the insurance premium for all its full-time workers over 30 hours a week. And then tells them, look, you've got, each of you now has an $1,850 annual deductible, which is an incentive for you to shop around because, you know, the first $1,850 comes from you. It's your money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now normally that could cause trouble for people because a lot of people don't have $1,850 saved up. Like if they get into a car accident, how are they going to pay that? And so the way you provide that financial security for people, and I call it deductible security.
Okay.
Is you simply, if you're Whole Foods and they actually do this, the company gifts each worker $1,850 a year.
Okay.
Right? So they're gifted the amount of money necessary to pay their deductible if it comes to that, if they, you know, have something catastrophic happen.
Yep.
But they're also told any money you don't spend rolls over in the account. It's your money to keep. So spend it wisely. And if you...
So you've now given them an incentive to make good decisions.
Absolutely. And the incentive is so powerful that that incentive by itself, forget about any education, training, we're going to teach people to be better shoppers. Just switching people from PPOs and HMOs into this plan where I'm describing where it's high deductible, but you're given enough money to cover the deductible.
Yeah.
That instantly cuts healthcare spending 35%.
Hmm. You have my attention.
Yeah. And then basically how you get, you know, an additional massive amount of savings is you put those people out into a healthcare marketplace where there's actually menus of prices and there's competition. You can get the prices in advance and you have medical prices plummeting every year, like with LASIK, rather than going up 10-20% a year. And so it's those two things, right? So protect people first, right? And this matters politically too, because you will not get a system through unless people are feeling safe politically.
Right.
But then give everyone in the system an incentive to compete and keep prices low and not waste money.
I think that's great. I mean, again, I'd love to be able to see this implemented. And it sounds like we have a lot of work on our hands to be able to see the data and the numbers. But generally speaking, the idea makes sense. I like that.
Well, yeah. And there's lots of other examples. You know, it's not just Whole Foods. Like, you know, one question people might instantly ask is, well, the average Whole Foods worker is sort of middle class, working class. Could this work for other people with other life circumstances? And so it's great that starting, it's been almost 13 years now, the state of Indiana created a radical new version of Medicaid, you know, which is our joint federal state health insurance program for people of lower incomes.
Okay.
And they basically set up something that looks like Whole Foods. So in that case, there's an $1,100 annual deductible, meaning that, you know, if you're a Medicaid recipient in Indiana and you're in this version of Medicaid, you're responsible for the first $1,100 of spending every year. But the state also gifts you enough or makes sure there's enough in your health savings account to to actually cover that $1,100. And again, they tell you, hey, any money you don't spend, it rolls over the next year, it's yours to keep. And if you compare the people of on that version of Medicaid with regular Medicaid, which has no financial incentives, right? It's first dollar coverage, government pays everything, it's someone else's money, no one's winding the shop. If you compare the people in the two versions of Medicaid, the ones on the innovative version I'm talking about with the deductible where you gift people the deductible so that they're safe, they also spend 35% less. So we know this works for low income. We know it works for middle income. There's other examples of, you know, well-paid state government employees showing the same behavior.
Right.
And it really is. One point here that I really want to emphasize, it's sustainable long-term cost saving because people are still going in for mammograms just as often. They're going in for annual checkups. They're doing all the preventive maintenance. It's the same rates they are on other types of insurance. But with this financial incentive to shop around and not waste money, suddenly, you know, consumption, and actually it's malconsumption, right? You know, you don't want people spending money on brand name drugs when the generic's available, right?
Mm-hmm.
People's behavior just massively changes and all this waste goes away. So that by itself gets you 35% total reductions. The price tags on the competition get you another 40%. And all of a sudden you're looking at 75% lower healthcare system wide.
Okay, now I understand that part. Can you elaborate a little bit more on, so, okay, again, these plans already exist, right? And so that aspect mm-hmm. I already understand. So they contribute, they're giving you part of the deductible. You have an idea of how much the cost is going to be. You're making better decisions. I understand that. Can we talk about the second aspect of being able to understand that the costs that the providers are charging you for the services, how do we make that more efficient?
Okay, so, you know, the Obama administration started a little about 4 years ago. I don't think this was part of the Affordable Care Act. It was later legislation, but it started in the Obama administration that hospitals had to put what it's a price list of what they do had to be available, but it's not posted on the internet. They could keep this in a filing cabinet locked away in a building at the hospital, and the only way anyone could get the prices would be to physically come in themselves and request it.
Got it.
Right.
So let's make that super convenient.
Yeah. So, but what's been nice is over the last 18 months, and there was a big announcement last week, the current Department of Health and Human Services has been moving more and more towards mandatory price transparency. So last year, I think they required hospitals to start attempting to put all those prices online. And then this year, they're going to make them more widely available and third parties can repost them, which means you could then have healthcare comparison websites. Like,
which is great.
You know, say you need a knee. Yeah. So they're moving in that direction, which is really great. But, you know, we should point out here that there, you know, I'm a social scientist and you want to look at all the evidence. The evidence so far says that if you just put prices out there but don't change people's incentives, the prices by themselves won't move the needle.
Got it. But the combination of the two together.
Yeah, that's
right. Won't move the needle.
Because you know, say you're a teenager and you've got daddy's credit card.
Yep.
Do you really care how much stuff costs at Nordstrom?
No.
Right? It does the price tags? No. But when it's your own money, you suddenly care what's printed on the price tag. So that
exactly.
combination really matters.
No, absolutely. That makes absolute sense. So then that being said, I want to ask you, then why do you think, in your opinion, why healthcare is so expensive in the United States compared to other countries?
Well, we have a uniquely stupid system, right? So all the single-payer
nice.
Countries... Nice. Well, we do. We ended up on this weird historical track, and, you know, the quick version is that in World War II, there were wage and price controls because they didn't want an inflation.
Right.
But with wage and price controls, people who needed to hire more workers, like Henry Kaiser out west, who was building Liberty boats, couldn't raise wages to attract them from Detroit and Flint, Michigan. And he stumbled upon offering people free health care as a way to get them to move out to the West Coast. By the end of the war, every major employer was doing that. So we ended up with the only healthcare system in the world where health insurance is tied to employment, right? In no other country in the world do anyone worry about, oh, if I'm going to lose my job, I'll lose my healthcare benefits, right? This is the only country in the world.
Right.
But that system also means that the premiums are paid by by your employer. Most people actually have no idea how much health insurance costs every year because it's a fringe benefit, right?
Right.
So So we're the only country where we hide the prices of the insurance premiums.
Mm.
And then in addition, you know, if you have a really nice insurance plan, you're paying, you know, $5 to fill a prescription, no matter how expensive the drug is. You've got a $10 office visit. We also made through this system everything look artificially free.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, insurance now picks up about 89 cents of every dollar spent on healthcare in America. So almost 90% is someone else's money. You don't really think about it.
Right.
And so we set up the system with really dumb incentives. And then the final dumb incentive was that health insurance is for the most part regulated at the state level. They're state insurance commissioners. Very often they're mm-hmm. elected directly, like here in California. So they're politicians. And their incentive is always going to be to include more stuff in health insurance policies, right? If a little girl gets sick and she's 6 years old and right. there's her insurance company is refusing to pay for a particular drug, it'll be a media storm on social media. She'll be Tuesday's child on, you know, ABC News or whatever. And then in the next year, that drug is required.
Right.
And
yeah.
so
it's listed in the plan.
Yeah. So, yeah. By contrast, in England and Canada, they have these politically insulated committees who have no political pressure on them, whose job is to say no and to deny care. And the rules get really, really arbitrary.
Hmm.
You know, after a certain age, they won't pay for a knee surgery. In England, if you've ever smoked in your life, even if you quit 30 years ago, they won't pay for any heart surgeries. Their argument being, you did that to yourself, it's your fault.
Wow.
And the general rule in England that really keeps costs down, but is really rough if you're in a bad situation, is anything that costs more than £25,000
mm-hmm.
to keep you alive for another year, they won't pay for.
Wow.
And there's a lot of drugs, cancer drugs especially, that
yep.
cost way more than £25,000. And so they, because they can create these politically insulated systems, which we can't because we've got directly elected insurance commissioners.
Right.
They're able to keep costs down in a way, and you know, you don't want to be too dramatic. You know, Sarah Palin came up with that term death panels like
yeah.
back in 2008. And that's overly dramatic because these committees in England are really trying to use a limited budget and, you know, help the most people, right?
Right.
But the problem is you've got a distant committee. They don't know your situation. They don't, you know, your particular problem. They're making cookie cutter rules. What the other great thing about the system I'm describing, where there's deductible security and stuff and price tags, is you really give power back to individual people. This is my money. Here's
right.
how I want to spend it. Here's what's important to me. But also the security of saying, hey, I've got enough to cover my deductible. If it's a bad year, everything else is on the insurance company. I'm covered. There's pre-existing conditions, universal coverage. You could do cradle to grave, everything. But you've still got enough capitalism in the system to make sure that the providers can't gouge anyone, that
mm-hmm.
you know, efficiency kicks in year after year and prices keep coming down. And we just don't have that now. So that was a long-winded answer, but
no, that's great.
We really goofed up our healthcare system.
No, that absolutely makes sense. So to keep on going on that same path of, if say we implemented some of these ideas and we just were able to move the needle a little bit, how much money do you really think that we can save on healthcare? And the end of the day, I can say to my clients, okay, great, we're able to put money back into your pocket and maybe put more money towards pensions or education or other areas that, you know, people are spending their money on now that they might not need to spend it on healthcare. They can use it in other areas of their life.
Okay, so the figure that I argue for in the book, and there's lots of evidence for this, it's not just me pulling a number out of a hat,
okay.
It's 75%. And
okay.
the reason we know that is that the nation I've been keeping a secret here the whole time is Singapore, and they've been doing this since the 1980s. They've got the world's healthiest population. You know, life expectancy is basically tied with the Japanese. Infant mortality there is 3 times lower than America. Maternal mortality is 7 times lower. Mm-hmm. Like, shockingly better outcomes, and they're spending 75% less, and it's just these really simple...
Wait, I just want to stop for just a second, because you have so much great content. But let's just make sure I heard that correct. They are saving 75%.
That's right, 75. Not 7.5, 75%,
yeah.
three quarters.
Exactly, yeah. And Paul just said, and they're getting better health. And
yep.
overall, they're living longer lives. Let's just stop for yep. a second. That's amazing.
Yeah, anyway. the amount of money we would save every year would be $2.4 trillion a year.
Can I ask just one quick question?
Put that in perspective.
People say this all the time. We've had other people. What you're saying is shocking, and I just don't think it. People hear it enough and set in. And the immediate knee-jerk reaction from those who would not support what you're doing is, well, that only works in a small little country. You can't do that here. Can you do that here on a larger scale?
Yes, absolutely, because this system that I'm describing is completely decentralized, right? It's easy to scale up a decentralized system, right? The problem is, can you scale up a centralized system where there's command and control? And we actually have a very centralized system right now. People don't know this, but most medical prices are set behind the scenes by Medicare and Medicaid services. They make reimbursement lists every year, and then the private insurance companies usually just knock another 10 or 20% onto all those numbers, like how much, you know, a doctor is going to get for doing, a knee replacement, right? And so that centralized price setting and trying to manage everything federally, that hasn't scaled well at all, right? It's a very dysfunctional system. We've still got 29 million people uninsured. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm describing, because it's so decentralized, you're putting money into people's pockets, and you're telling them, hey, this is your money, spend it wisely, go out and shop, right? We don't worry, is Walmart going to scale up or McDonald's scale up nationally, right? But that's just a bunch of people, consumers, with money in their pocket. They go out, and if they want fast food, there's 30 different options. You know, here in Southern California, within a two-mile radius, there's probably at least 30 fast food places, right?
Yep, yep.
And you don't worry about that scaling up to the rest of the world, right? And so the great thing about this system, you asked such a good question, Paul, you actually don't have to worry about that scaling up question. Capitalism works everywhere.
Got it.
Love it. How do people get in touch with you if they want to hear more?
Okay, on social media, and I need to post more, it's my name, Sean Flynn, SeanFlynnCA for California, so Sean Flynn, CA. If anyone just wants to email me, please do. I'll give you my Scripps College address. You know, I'm a professor there. It's S. Flynn for Sean Flynn, S. Flynn at scrippscollege.edu.
And everything that we're talking about today is your book. Where can the audience find your book?
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. So it's, the easiest and actually the least expensive place to buy it is on Amazon.
Okay, we like that.
Kindle edition. And yeah, Kindle and hardback, and the paperback should be out shortly. So the book is called The Cure That Works. And so if you just go to Amazon and type in The Cure That Works, it'll pop right up.
That's fantastic. Well, we're actually out of time. It's been such an amazing time talking with you and hearing all about your book. And I think that, you know, as the next few years, as we have, you know, the next presidential campaigns, this is going to be a big topic for a lot of people. And again, we're wealth managers. You know, people are saying, you know, why are we bringing, you know, people on that are experts like yourself in healthcare and being able to kind of raise questions? But we have to come up with solutions to be able to help people make changes in their lives that affect them financially in all aspects. So it was such an honor to have you on our show today and being able to just provide a different opinion and a different thought. And so as people continue to go down the path later on, I'd love for them to be able to look for you or for them to at least reach out for questions and just know that, you know, there's more than one way of doing things, and hopefully people can take tips from your new book.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And yeah, that's my main goal, is to get this in the public policy debate over the next few years, because we're probably at the federal level going to do some big initiative on healthcare, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, the next 5 years. And so thank you for helping me spread the word. I'm really honored to be on your show.
So great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Sean. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show, or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc. and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc. under SEC registration.